Our guest this morning on Talking Melbourne is Tony Wilson, broadcaster, speaker, MC, author, proud dad, custodian of the world's largest collection of speeches. Many famous, many not famous, but all significant in their big and small ways. If you'd like to look that up during the chat, it's speakola.com. Welcome to you, Tony. Beautiful track to choose, and there's a good story behind it too.
Emily, thanks for having me on. Not the Paul Kelly song that is usually played on repeat at this time of year.
Yes.
How to Make Gravy. But that is From St Kilda to King's Cross. And you asked me to pick a special song to me with a bit of a story attached. And I've been in a state of panic ever since. There's a thousand songs have crossed my mind, but I went with this one.
And what's the story and the connection to your life between this song and you?
Well, you mentioned those things that I've done and are doing. And in many ways, it's been a move into media. And the move happened way back, 25 year ago anniversary this year, with a show called Race Around the World on ABC TV. I'm now a pasty, bald, 50-something guy. Back then, I had a fluffy, blonde hair. I was enthusiastic and young, and I was one of those people who set off with a camcorder to 10 countries in 100 days.
Back in the day when camcorders were all we had for quick filming, wow.
And we had to make a four-minute story in each country. And you're right about the technological changes. We used to shoot on these little 33-minute mini DV tapes and then DHL or FedEx the tapes back to the ABC in Sydney with a written edit script as to how we wanted it cut together. No iPhones back then. And we made these stories. And so this song I always think of as a special moment in those. There were many special moments in those 100 days. I went to Bolivia and Idaho and the US and Italy, Lebanon, France, Israel, Kenya, India and China. But one country was Kenya. And the story I was doing there was a group called Group Africa. And they were basically advertising for multinationals. Basically, they decided that rural Kenya and Tanzania and Ethiopia didn't have enough TVs and radios and this sort of thing to pump out their multinational messages. Mm. And so they do the shows, they do ads on big stages. And basically for 8 hours, they'd run ads, you know, like they'd have a teeth white competition to advertise a toothpaste. And so I was there and I'd met this group and I was dying on stage as a cockroach in an insect repellent commercial every day for 10 days. And I was getting around taking my overlay shots with my camera. And the DJ there was playing on this old sort of stuck together Walkman. He was playing songs through these massive speakers. And he saw that I had a Discman. And believe it or not, he was wowed by my Discman technology. And he went and bought some solder and some, this is at a market in Kisumu near the Ethiopian border. And he basically, he rigged up my Discman to play through his speakers because he was so excited at the idea of playing CDs.
Yeah.
And then I was just taking my overlay and I was about 500 meters from the stage and this, you know, 150 decibel plane taking off sort of volume boomed out over me. And it was From St Kilda to King's Cross, because he grabbed one of the songs from one of my CDs. And it was just the most bizarre to be on the Ethiopian-Kenyan border and to hear Paul Kelly singing about that sweet promenade. It was just a really special moment. I've never forgotten. I always think of the song fondly.
I've read you refer to that year on Race Around the World, 98, as the year that made you. How did it change you and what makes you the man you are today based on and those 100 days you spent filming?
So I was a lawyer before that. I was at Minter Ellison, commercial lawyer, doing quite mundane and boring corporate sort of jobs. I always say the most creative part of every day was deciding whether to sign off letters yours sincerely or yours faithfully. It was kind of it was very dry. And so I wanted a way out. I'd liked having fun with making videos and writing little parody songs and giving 21st speeches. It had been an interest. And so applying for this show actually gave me confidence that I could do it. And, you know, when I was picked out of I think 20,000 people went for this trip. And I was picked out and I ended up winning the show. And, you know, and apart from the fact that opportunities flowed from it, I got it shot. The show didn't take off, but I was a part of a comedy show called The Late Report that Richard Stubbs hosted, you know, a few months after Race Around the World. And I had other opportunities with making videos on ABC and that sort of stuff. So the jobs did flow from it. But I think probably more importantly, it was like, I'm not going to go back to that. I did really love doing this. And so I'm going to pursue it. And so pursue it I have, you know, from writing kids' books and writing novels to making sports films and writing sports books. I've had quite a diverse and interesting 25 years.
What did the Kenyan Advertising Bureau think when you turned up to the casting and said, or said to them, I want to be in one of your stage ads?
Well, it was actually John Safran did it the year before me, and he gave me the clue on this story. John Safran, who's now a great author himself, he said that they do these advertising on stage. I wanted to do it, but I didn't get to do it. Why don't you do it? And so I rang up the organisers. They knew I was coming. Probably when they saw me, they didn't expect their cockroach to be quite so tall and quite
so
white.
How tall are you? What's your height?
I'm 6'3½". And so I was a very white, tall cockroach dying amongst a very Kenyan cast.
They probably thought they'd gotten lucky to have such a tall, strapping presence for the cockroach role on stage. I mean, it's a key role, so.
I remember I got this. There were 7,000 people out there watching these ads. And I had the camera reversed on me and I said, can you give me a Redsect, Redsect, Redsect? And I had 7,000 people screaming, Redsect, Redsect, Redsect. It is up on YouTube somewhere.
Joyous memories. When we come back after the bat break, we'll talk about Spicola. You have a great newsletter and lots of connection with your community, so we'll go into that more. Tony Wilson is our guest today on Talking Melbourne, 16 minutes past 9. 20 minutes past 9 on 3AW. Tony Wilson is our guest today on Talking Melbourne. Spicola.com. It's your love project to the written word, a collection of speeches, the biggest in the world. Some are famous, some are not, but all are moving in some way. Tell us how that love project was born, because it came out of a source of grief for you.
It did. I always thought of myself as a speaker. I think I was saying I did 21st speeches by the dozen back in the 90s. And, you know, I was just very keen on words and writing, and in particular comedy. And then I had the worst sort of speech to deliver in 2013. It's going to be 10 years, actually, on the 21st of this month. But my best man, he committed suicide. And none of us kind of saw it coming. He was a very funny guy, really vivacious. He was the life of the party, actually. But probably we didn't realise that he also had some real difficulties. He was carrying mental health and depression issues. Found out about that when it was too late, unfortunately. And so I had the job of writing a eulogy. And I remember I was writing it, and when you're sort of doing that, I think you sort of have this, I'd like to read one to see how people who have written maybe on the similar sort of circumstances have dealt with things like mental health or suicide. And I couldn't really find a place where speeches were and where eulogies were. And so I thought, I wonder if I could do that. I wonder if I could start collecting them and putting them all together. And so I'd been going to read, you know, and listen to I Have a Dream by Martin Luther King. I used to listen to that every year. And I loved one, you know, This is Water by David Foster Wallace. And so I sort of went, what if I just start putting them in? And I bought a Squarespace account and, you know, just started adding the words and then an embed of the video so that people could watch the video and then read the speech. And I'll probably put in 500 or 1,000 to start with, and then made the site live and then invited people to send me speeches and also to recommend speeches. And I'd go so far as to say I'm at 3,500, and I'll challenge your listeners to name a great speech that I haven't put up, because I'm pretty good at finding the very famous speeches and also the not so famous speeches. And so it's now, you know, I've got nearly 2 million hits 1 year, and I've had a podcast for the last, since lockdown, I've been doing a podcast. In fact, I just got a text from Ted Bailey saying that one sweet promenade about Paul Kelly, said he had a tear in the eye. And Ted Bailey, former Premier, is a former Spicola podcast guest. I'm sure it's at the top of his CV. But he came on to talk about his beautiful speech he gave as a commemoration to the Black Saturday bushfires. And actually, that episode, if you're interested in being a better speaker, to listen to Ted Bailey talk about how to control a room, you know, where to look in the room, how to project voice, all that sort of stuff. It's one of the most instructional of the podcast episodes. And so, yeah, it's Speakola, my own tiny empire of speeches. It's got a podcast. It's got the speech bank itself, which is speakola.com. And then it's got the newsletter, which is news.speakola.com. And some people pay to subscribe to that, and some people get it for free.
Yeah, so there's different tiers you can choose if you want the free version, or if you want to get deeper into the project with you, you can. Yeah, let's do that and throw that out there, Tony. 133693. What is a speech that you think should be on TonyWilsonSpeakola.com? And he's an encyclopedia. If it's already up there, he'll tell you, and then you can go and investigate it and reminisce and listen and read it. And if not, well, it might be a submission that makes it through. How many submissions are you getting? And what is it like for you to read submissions of 21st birthdays, which are joyous, eulogies, which can be joyous, but are more often than not devastating? What is it like for you personally to read these and take that on board? That's a lot of emotion. That's a lot of things to feel every week as you're sifting through.
So I love it. I feel like I have a connection to the whole of the country, and I feel like I get to hear the everyday stories and to feel as though you live for a moment in people's lives. I know some people. My dad's a bit of a funeral addict. You know, like he loves going to them. He's 78, 79 years old.
But it's a reunion opportunity for a lot of us that life goes on. You see other loved ones at a funeral,
and you also hear the best stories of people's lives. You know, and people often put a lot of energy into making that speech as good as they can do. And then you also hear these kind of interesting and sometimes you've known the person your whole life and they've never known that they did military service or that they went here or that they played this sport for a whole long period of time or that they lived in Burma. It's sort of sometimes the eulogy brings up an element that you've just never known about the person. So I feel like it connects me to the ordinary person, and it is an emotional sort of job, but at the same time, it's like I just got an email last week from a guy up in Sydney who's actually John Cordner, the footballer's son, Jeff Cordner, and his son died on Australia Day, I think, 4 years ago, and he's got a website called The Beniverse, and he wants people to remember Ben, his son. And he just gave me such a warm thank you for being able to put these eulogies back out there to a wider audience. And that I think for people who are going through the kind of agony of this, there's a sense that they can connect people to the memory that they are clinging to so strongly. And I certainly feel that with Daff, my friend. Mm. So every year I've tried to push up what a wonderful person he was, what a funny person he was, and so that memory that sustains me is still out there for other people as well.
Mm. What did Ted say to you in the podcast about commanding a room? What were some of his tips? You're an accomplished MC yourself. Perhaps you do some of these. What did he say?
So he talked about microphones. He doesn't like, I actually like microphones, but Ted said that where possible, avoid microphones. He says they often distort the voice. And if you can command the room yourself with the voice, avoid microphones. He also talked about the corners of the room, picking the top right corner, the top left corner, the front corner and the front left, so that you've got breadth of gaze. He talked about knowing your speech and your material and knowing key phrases that you might want to say, but being freed up by not having to read. And that's an experience thing. Like, you know, people who are giving their first major speech in front of a whole church or reception centre, that's very stressful to go note-free, but someone like Ted can do that, and he talks about the power of that. And a lot of people do that, that once you're free from the notes, this is where you take your great leap.
Mm. You know? Is it okay to be funny in a eulogy? I think people sometimes are frightened to instigate laughter during a somber moment, but do you think there's a place for humour in a eulogy?
Absolutely there is. So sometimes I've just been to the Cal Wilson like commemoration of life that was on at the Forum, and it was a series of comedians who had me in tears and stitches at the same time. There was one of their friends talked about that she thought she'd seen the mythical panther of the Grampians, and they were having a lifelong fight about whether she'd seen the panther or whether it was just a feral cat.
Yes.
And so that sort of became, that was the guiding light of the funeral. Damien Callinan, the comedian, was the first ever guest we had on the podcast, and he talks about, again, really instructionally, how you can interweave jokes into a eulogy, in this case for his parents. And so that's episode one of Speak Ola podcast. I absolutely think that laughing at certain, you need to have those laugh release stories, and then you crank it up into the back end with the and one trick I'll give you if you're doing a eulogy is to switch into, if you've been talking in the third person, like mum was the sort of person who did, then if you start addressing mum, I'll never, you did this for me, mum, you might. So as soon as you go into the second person, where you're saying you to the coffin, that's where you'll turn on the tears for everyone. It's like a switch.
Yes.
And so a lot of people do that the last paragraph or two are addressed to the dead person, and the eulogy at large has been a third person.
Yes, yes. Reason I ask about laughter at a eulogy is that when my grandmother died, my father gave a eulogy that had a lot of humour in it. And I looked at the funeral home staff, and there was a flicker of surprise in their eyes, and then they let their facial expressions collapse into a grin and enjoy it. But you could see there was a moment I thought, I wonder if it doesn't happen very often, that we want to reflect the grandiose stuff and not maybe share the raw stuff, the weaknesses, the things that made us who we are.
Well, the storytelling, I think, is the most important. So that in the old days, I think the traditional eulogy is to say, you know, he was born in Melbourne and then attended Scotch College and then had a distinguished career in the law. And I think those eulogies are sort of a little bit boring by comparison to one that jumps into a story or starts with a quote or really propels you into this person's life. And you think of how would a novelist or how would a journalist try to get you interested in this story beyond the kind of bullet points of who they were, when they were born and what they did. And you know, leave that for the who's who inscription. But actually, if you're trying to engage friends and family, it's the stories that'll get you there. I mean, one of the successful stories in the speech I gave about my best man is I met him at Article Clerkship at Minter's. And the first thing that ever happened was he fainted and collapsed onto the floor. And then we all gathered around. There were 50 of us in this welcome drinks for Article Clerks. And as his eyes flicked open, he stuck his hand up and went, "Hi, Chris Dapper." Yeah. And so that kind of, and so what a way to meet a person and what presence and humour he had. And so to be able to introduce the people that are mourning him with that story, you've immediately got, that's what you're doing with the song at the start, where you ask us to tell a story. It's always more fun if there's a story.
Yes, yes. 133-693. If you've got a speech that you would like to suggest to Tony should be on speakola.com, and even so, if it is there, he will tell you. Nobody knows the art of words like Tony Wilson. You're listening to Talking Melbourne. Back in a moment. 25 minutes to 10 on 3AW, Talking Melbourne with Tony Wilson. I mentioned off the top that you're a proud dad, because on your social media that, you know, you love sharing your family and life and your four children. Now that has a connection to Jack, your boy.
It does. So I've got four kids ranging from 16 down to 8, and the two boys in the middle, but one of them has cerebral palsy. He's in a wheelchair, Jack. And he's a music lover. And that song, that American Land, and in particular those opening bars, he used to listen to Bruce Springsteen 4 hours a day, and that song was about 2 hours a day. And so when Bruce came in 2017, he was 5 years old, but we thought, oh, should we plough the $150 or $200 into giving him a chance? And I get, when I say giving him a chance, we didn't really think he could make it because of noise sensitivity, and he sort of has that, he's very worried by amplified sound. But at the same time, it was like, could he see Bruce Springsteen? Yeah. And so we decided to risk it. And Tam, actually, I'll give her the credit. I was saying it'll ruin my concert. And we're going to be managing the whole time. But my wife said, we've got to give him a shot at it. And we bought the ticket, and I got a backpack. And so, because he wouldn't, at that time I could still lift him in the backpack. And we went in, and I remember actually, hats off to the Amy Park security guard. He said, no backpacks. And I went, oh, you know, if he can't go, if he can't go in the backpack, this boy won't be able to enjoy the concert. And he went, no, that is a different situation. And so he allowed the camping backpack in. And Jack went on the back, and he was so nervous, and he almost wanted to go home beforehand. And then those notes started, that drum beat and that sort of Irish melody of American Lad. It was his favourite song first up, and he started whooping with, and it's actually up online. And
you thought, we're in for a big night. He's not going to want to go home.
And the video, that video was watched more than a million times on Facebook. It was just this sort of joyous thing of seeing a boy celebrate his favourite artist. And in fact, even Stephen Van Zandt, the guitarist from Bruce Springsteen's band, you know, saw that video as well and made contact. It was lovely.
Yeah, you have a common love of music with Jack. Is it the lyrics, the beats? What is it? Has he taken on that love of the lyrics and the words that you have? What is it that you share together?
Well, I share the love of music, but I don't share any talent. Whereas actually, Jack has quite a lot of rhythmic talent and melodic talent for a kid who's got real challenges. Like, his physios always go, well, how can he hit these in the beats within the beats when he's got spasticity through all four limbs? And he just seems to be able to do it. And, you know, I was even laughing because I gave you the Adelaide concert, American Land there.
Yeah.
And if he hears this recording, he'll say, that wasn't our concert. That was Adelaide. And he'll know it's Adelaide and not Melbourne. You know, so he has this ear for the exact melody and a memory for lyrics as well. He's quite phenomenal.
Yeah, incredibly sensitive ear. That's extraordinary.
Yeah. So we do share it, though. And it's a thing where, you know, even we've been obsessed with the Cat Empire. And so,
and you recently saw them together.
Yeah, we went down to Mornington, the whole family. It was only 45 minutes before the curfew did us in on the Peninsula Shire.
Councils again. don't get 3AW started on councils.
But it was just a lovely 45 minutes. And you know, we've been listening to my phone recording of that concert for the last, you know, 2 weeks. It's been lovely. He's phenomenal. And that particular image of him on my back with Bruce there, you know, we'll have to see him again one day. Hopefully he comes with this tour.
Let's stick with family. Your father played in the 1971 Hawks Premiership, and then you knocked on the door of... you were drafted. I was going to say knocked on the door of selection. You were drafted to the AFL. Tell us about that part of your life.
So, Dad was in Ray Wilson, number 10, out on the wing and played in the centre in the second half of the 71 Grand Final. Had a great half, actually. I was always, you know, any kid I think whose dad plays, or most kids whose dad played who have any sort of ability at all, are filled with the sort of ambition to do it themselves. And I got close. I was playing good footy at the end of school, and I was captain of the under-19s. I played 3 years of under-19s at Hawthorn, and it was actually in the last year of under-19s. And they were allowed to put 5 players on the list from their under-19s list, and they put me on as a father's son. And I guess I was at that point going, I'm going to get there. But over the next 6 months, it was 1992. And I remember Alan Joyce said to me, you know, if you get stress fractures again, I'm not sure we'll keep you on. And I did get stress fractures again. And I didn't have a great 6 months, in fact, quite a miserable 6 months. And I sort of faded off, got delisted and didn't make it back. Had a go at Essendon as well to try and get back. But, you know, that sort of 89 to 95 was very dedicated to trying to make AFL footy, but it ended up being a 1 year on a senior list, zero game career.
But you wrote a book about the 1989 grand final through Slattery Media Group, we have a connection there. I've worked for Slats, and so you've continued your relationship with the Hawks through the media.
So I'm a better writer than I was a footballer. And Slatt said, can you write this recollection of 89? Because I'd written a piece for The Age, about a 1,500-word piece about the 89 grand final. Slatt loved it and said, can you do the 50,000-word version?
What was your angle?
So I went through and I took Geelong from the start of the season. They had such an interesting year that year. Malcolm Blight arrived at the club. He was sort of a revolutionary. They had Gary Ablett, who'd been a sort of a mercurial but not always consistent genius. And Malcolm Blight kind of clicked with him. He gave him an ultimatum. It's in the book, actually, a speech he sort of delivered on a bridge at a wildlife sanctuary in Geelong, saying, "We walk across this bridge. If we walk across together, you're in. And if you don't, then I don't want you." Mm. And so there's lots of lovely stories of how Malcolm Blight transformed Geelong. And so I'm almost going alternate chapters, and they're very short chapters. Hawthorne with their coach returning after his brain aneurysm, that's Alan Jeans, and they're going for the back-to-back premierships. Geelong having this renaissance and this rebirth under Malcolm Blight, and they're going to meet in this iconic game that'll be talked about for 50 or 100 years, and some would say it's the greatest game ever. Mm. I think it was 72 shots at goal or something like that. Incredible. Right. And so really it was just speak to the players, get a sense of the inside stories. And it's been beautifully received. Jess Slattery said to me, if this book was about the Super Bowl, you would have sold 500,000 copies. But this book is about AFL Grand Final. So I've sold 5,000.
It's still available. Is it still available?
Yeah, it's available for me, for starters.
Oh, good. Yeah,
TonyWilsonAuthor.com. And then you'll find it as the 1989 The Great Grand Final. So I'll send you a signed copy if you want. I think if you do Express Post, I can probably get it there by Friday.
Oh, beauty. Oh, yeah, maybe in time for Christmas. As we head towards the break, as a words man, what's your favourite word?
Happenstance.
Happenstance. That's a good one. And your least favourite word?
Going forward. That's two words, isn't it?
You can take that as a question with notice.
Yeah,
in the break. One of the speeches that I've referred to through my life is Kennedy's Don't Think, Do.
Yeah.
I think I wanted to bring it up now because we're in the realm of Hawthorne. And when I've had difficulties in my life, my father has sent it to me to watch, and I come back to it again and again. Is that on speakola?
Yeah, absolutely it is. And in fact, the context of it's there as well, which is he was giving a bit of a bullet in the previous bit, you know, a bit of a bake from the coach towards Michael Moncrief. It was halftime in the 1975 Grand Final, and then the last bit of it is really moving. Like it's about Peter Crimmins not being able to be there, about him not being in the team and how he so wanted to play, but he couldn't. And so he's really saying, you know, that this is your moment to act.
Let's take a break. We'll be back in a moment with Tony Wilson on Talking Melbourne. Minutes to 10 on 3AW. That's All the Things by The Killers, and our guest this morning on Talking Melbourne is Tony Wilson. You intimately know the lyrics to this song, Tony.
So you asked for story songs, and I panickedly wrote back to you with 7 examples because I couldn't pick one. And she said, well, we'll just do snippets of all of them, you said, didn't you?
So here we are.
This one was on the day my daughter, my firstborn, was born, so 2007. I was riding home from the hospital, and it was one of those summer nights, February 24 of 2007, and it was sultry, and then it started to really rain, and I was in that football field, just next to that football field in Clifton Hill, and I always feel like it was almost, no one was there, it felt like it was almost Julie Andrews-like. I had that kind of feeling of joy of becoming a father, and I had that song was on the headphones, and I almost sort of span in the field singing this song. And then I thought last year we went to see The Killers, and there's my 16 or then 15-year-old daughter next to me, and she was singing every word of the song. And I just thought, it is a special song, that song for me, and thinking about my daughter and also thinking just generally about becoming a father.
Yeah, beautiful. You've written kids' books, adult books, documentaries. What's next for you in the space of storytelling?
So I'm writing a biography of Alan Jeans. If you've got a good Alan Jeans story, you should email me, tony@tonywilson.com. www.thebusinessmarketer.com.au. But actually, my main job that's consumed me this year that is a documentary about a Hungarian footballer who became a coach. His name, Ferenc Puskas. He was the best player in the world in the 1950s, part of the famous Magical Magyar team. And Ferenc Puskas came to Australia. And I think this was a reasonably little-known story until Ange Postecoglou really ascended. But he was coach of the South Melbourne Hellas team in the NSL. And so we had this strange situation where one of the greatest players of all time, you know, sort of a, they name the best goal in the world each year, wins the Puskas Award. So this guy is a colossus. And he comes out, he lives in a little two-bedroom house just behind a nursery in Ashwood. And Ange Postecoglou has a Datsun 200B and is coach of the South Melbourne Hellas. And he is commuting, he is driving Ange Postecoglou to the airport. There's a story in our documentary of a flat tire. And Puskas was fat by this stage. And he wouldn't get out of the car while Postecoglou is trying to jack up the car. And Ange is talking about how funny it was just having this guy sit there as he tried to change a tire on the Tullamarine Freeway. It's a really great story of a big fish in what was then a small football pond. And so, you know, we've loved telling it. And we're trying to get it up in the time where, you know, Angie's now going so well as the coach of Tottenham. And it feels very current and very of the moment. And so we're just actually, I don't know if you know how expensive footage is in a documentary, but it's like, you know, our bill to the ABC with 21 minutes of footage is $80,000.
Wow.
So it's about $63 a second. FIFA, they make you take a minute of footage and it costs $35,000 Australian.
Wow.
So it's just so we've been...
And you want to be able to use the footage you want and for costs not to impact the tale you want to tell.
Yeah. So if you look on, I've got a newsletter, as I said, Good One Wilson, and I've written about this Puskas and Ange documentary. You can find the stories there. And we've been fundraising. There's crowdfunding and there's also sort of, a call out. If you just happen to be the South Melbourne Hellas fan who has done well in life and wants to see a film at the Melbourne Film Festival and on streaming services next year, then, you know, we need help to get the film financed. So that's been my last 6 months. It's been doing the rounds and doing the tin rattle and just trying to make what'll be our second documentary. First one was about the Galahs in Ireland, the Harry Beitzel coach team that's on Stan, called the Galahs, and it's about a great trip to Ireland.
Oh, yeah. Terrific. So your time frame is to have the film wrapped by when?
Oh, so it's sort of finished. It really is very finished. It just needs to be paid for. So we've used the screener footage to put in, but now we have to put the copyright cleared footage in.
Yes.
And that requires the money. It turns out that smart broadcasters let you see the stuff that you want to put in your film. And then you'd pay for it afterwards. Yeah.
It's like putting the apple pie on the windowsill cooling as the farmer's walking past and the temptation.
But we'll get it up. I know this film's great. So it'll be out next year. And
has there been anything you've wanted to achieve that you haven't? You say you're going to get it up. It strikes me that when you decide upon something, Tony, go for it.
I'm pretty good. Yeah. Someone once said to me, "You're a good finisher, Tony." I am a good finisher.
That's a good thing to be. We'll wrap up in a moment with Tony Wilson on Talking Melbourne. It's 7 minutes to 10. 3 minutes to 10 on 3AW. Tony, take us through all the places where we can follow your work, enjoy Speakola, and maybe even get a newsletter dropped into our inboxes with something inspiring each day.
Well, Speakola, you can find it. Speakola.com is all the speeches. If you want to get an email a week from me, news.speakola.com, and you can sign up for free for that. On the books front, the 1989 The Great Grand Final, I've seen a few people making orders of that one. That's TonyWilsonAuthor.com, and I've got the Selwood Boys there. I've got picture books. The Cow Tripped Over the Moon was one of mine. They're all up, and if I do an express post, I'll get it there by Christmas, I think. And then on the personal front, this has sort of been an experiment this year, and that is news. It's Good One Wilson. So basically, I can put up all these audios and videos and writing about Jack and writing about his music love, writing about stuff like my daughter and the song, the Killer's song. I do pieces like that and put that up about once or twice a week as well on Good One Wilson. So if you look up Good One Wilson, you'll find that. Again, free, or you can pay if you like. This is one of my favourite songs, my favourite Australian Christmas song. Casey Bonetto with Swing Around the Sun that he has at a very Bella Christmas each year.